bonus.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. We've got a really great show ahead of us. Joining me are Neil from the Land of Unicorns. What's up, Neil?
Hey, Justin. I love your optimism.
We've got Rob from the Land of Chicken Wings.
The Land of Chicken Wings? I'm in the coast of Florida. I feel like I'm at the Land of Happy Hour.
And from the Land of Shattered Dreams, we've got Kevin. What's up, Kevin?
That's not very nice to say about New York. I thought those were dreams were made in New York City. But, yeah, I'm doing okay. Sunday afternoon, can't complain.
All right, so today we've got two things going on. We've got a great interview led by the one and only Pod Vader of Dakota Cox, linebacker from New Mexico. Before we get to that, though, we're just going to talk some news items, kind of update around the league. Should be a pretty simple show today. I think next week we'll get into a little bit more draft talk as we head towards the big show. So let's go ahead and just get it started. I think the biggest news item is probably the signing of Desmond Trufant. Signed an extension, $69 million, $42 million guaranteed. You know none of those numbers are totally real, but that's somewhere on the right track. So let's start with you, Rob. What do you think of this contract for Desmond Trufant?
I mean, I like it. The price, you know, the price is going to go up for elite players. You know, the salary cap has gone up, you know, $10 million a year each of the last 2 years, and that, you know, from the looks of it, is going to keep on happening. So you're going to see these bloated contracts, you know, but Trufant's worth it. He got injured at the end of the year last year, but he played well. His contract, even when you look at the details, it is a, you know, it's a nice contract, $15 million right up front. Option the next year is even, you know, guaranteed even with injury. So, you know, when you look at the year average, I think his works out to somewhere around, you know, 14 and a half. You know, a little bit higher than A.J. Bouye signed this year. And then also, you know, Stephon Gilmore, formerly the Bills, signed, you know, about $1 million more than those. So, you know, good for him. And you're just, you know, just kind of the way it is in the NFL. Elite, you know, high-end players are going to, you know, keep on seeing bigger and bigger contracts like this.
Kevin, do you agree with that assessment that he is an elite cornerback?
I definitely agree that he's an elite corner. The only concern I have with Trufant, I mean, I might be wrong here, but I know he was missed the majority of this season, the most recent season, with injury. And I think he's also had some previous nagging injuries in the first few years of his career. I could be completely making that up. But if he stays healthy, in my opinion, I completely agree with Rob. Every year the salary cap goes up, so contracts are getting richer and richer. So it's really, and as you said, he's probably not going to receive all this money at the end of the day. So I really don't have a problem with his contract. I mean, I think the Falcons had to do it. If they wanted to keep him, they had to do it, and they needed to keep him because he is a top 5-6 corner in this league. So you can maybe say they overpaid him by a couple mil, but when it all comes down to it, it really doesn't matter. They needed to give it to him.
Neil, do you think they needed him? They went to the Super Bowl with him on the injured reserve.
Oh, yes. You can't... You can't let go a cornerback of his quality. Okay, he only played 9 games this year, but he has the prototypical size. He's 6 foot, 190 pounds. Certainly a number one cornerback. Any team's going to take that. A young guy, only 26. And of course, Justin, just following on from last Thursday's excellent podcast, he is, of course, one of the stars of the 2013 NFL draft. And that's a rarity in that draft.
Legitimately good player from that draft is that's a rare thing.
That's as rare as hen's teeth, and he's a good player. Good player, got to keep him.
Yeah, I agree with all of you guys. I think that the price is high, but it's fair for, you know, where he is, what he does, given his age, his productivity. I love it. I might be a little bit biased because of the, you know, he's from the area. You know, his whole family comes from this way, so I always root for the Trufants, but to me, that's kind of a no-brainer. Speaking of some cornerback news, Ladarius Webb, back to the Ravens. Kevin, this seemed almost inevitable. You know, they released him, but I didn't see anybody else picking him up. What do you think?
I sort of agree with you there. I mean, I don't know the specifics of the deal. It was a 3-year deal, correct?
Yeah, 3, 10 and a half.
There you go.
3.5, yeah. So it really wasn't that much money. I mean, I think at one point Ladarius Webb had a promising, really promising NFL future in, let's say, 2012, 2013, and then injuries really, really got the best of him, which is sort of why he moved from corner to mainly play safety now. So I don't think he really got that much interest in other teams. So, yeah, I sort of agree with you. It was sort of a formality for him just to come back on with the Ravens on this short mini deal. But I guess it's good for the Ravens. He's definitely a solid player, knows the organization, knows the system, good leadership qualities. So don't have a problem with that either. Don't really think it's all that big of news, but something nice for Ladarius Webb, I guess. So congratulations, Ladarius. I want $10 million one day too.
So, speaking of, cornerbacks, Robert, let's talk a little bit about the Bills. And there's a couple of players I want to talk about. Let's start with Marcus Cromartie. He just signed with the Bills. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that is that, I mean, he played in San Francisco for a little bit. They added when he got signed, they added about 8 guys. So I worry that it may be just, you know, kind of a quick look, maybe a camp guy. Obviously his last name resonates, because of, you know, the, you know, Cromartie, there's a, you know, a couple already in the NFL. But to me, that wasn't really the big signing to me of the 8 that were signed wasn't necessarily him. It was, you know, if you're going to take a shot, it was honestly, it was Bradley, I might be pronouncing his last name wrong, Sylvie, who was the cornerback from Alabama, who I liked, who came with a, you know, kind of an injury history. He tore his Achilles really bad at the pro day, last year. You know, and he had to take the whole year off. Alabama let him go to their to their pro day this year, and he ended up running a 4.43. So I think of any of the people that were added, the 8 that the Bills added a couple days ago, I think he's the one who's kind of more intriguing. Also plays the same position, you know, cornerback. I think if any of them stick, he may be the guy. I worry Cromartie. I mean, I know he played a little bit in San Francisco, but I think it might be just more of a, maybe not a solo a camp guy, but maybe someone who they're not necessarily expecting to, you know, make the final 53.
Neil, do you recall your evaluation of Sylvie from last year? I certainly don't remember his name from the pre-draft process of 2016.
No, not at all. Justin, I can't add anything there. What I can add, though, is about Cromartie. Isn't he mainly a special teams guy? I mean, I don't think he started. To me, he started one or two games in his career.
He started one game in his career. Played a couple others. I said, yeah, he's, you know, special teams. Bills have a decent amount of special teams guys, though. You know that they kind of have. You know, Colt Anderson, who's a safety, is going to be a big special teams guy. Lorenzo Alexander, who they signed to a 2-year deal. He was a core, you know, special teams guy last year. So I don't think the Bills are necessarily, you know, searching for one. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, it's a long time till September. But for me, as a Bills fan, I'm more curious about Sylvie, just maybe coming from where he came from. And there is more of an unknown than, you know, Cromartie, who, to me, I don't know if he necessarily makes the team. I don't know if either guy's making.
Yeah, so Sylvie was a quick guy. He was a quick cornerback, you know, really, really fast guy, Alabama. So we'll see if he's still got some of his pace. And of course, it reminds us a little bit of Sidney Jones, of course, another cornerback who got injured this year.
Yeah.
So let's hope that the year off recuperating and Sylvie will get a chance to do something. Buffalo could be a bit of a coup for you there.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
Well, you at the very least, you would hope. Okay, speaking of cornerbacks, let's talk about one of mine. Richard Sherman is apparently on the market. So let's just go around the horn real quick. Kevin, we'll start with you. Would you have interest in Richard Sherman, and how much would you be willing to give up to get Richard Sherman?
I would definitely have interest in Sherman. I mean, I forgot someone on Slack posted it the other day. The Seahawks said that they're open to trading Sherman is like his lateral quickness is really fell down last year. They're hoping he can pick it up again this year or something of that nature. But I mean, I would love if the Cowboys could get Sherman, but I don't think the Cowboys are going to want to give up what the Seahawks want. They would probably definitely want at least the second round pick, I would imagine. Even probably a first, some team would probably give up for Sherman. I mean, there's a lot of bad GMs out there. So for the right price, I would take Sherman, but I don't think there's going to be a right price for the Cowboys or for any other team for that matter.
All right,
I don't
what about
expect
you?
Sherman. Yeah. Go on, someone else.
Well, in terms of Washington, I would not want Richard Sherman. Can I also say why? I don't want Richard Sherman. I think there's an important part here, Justin, and that is that a player like, you know, do you remember last year Sherman was going to, he's going to end some journalist's career, and he's got a lot to say. There was all these arguments on the sidelines we saw. And this is very typical in the NFL of a player who needs to be told to just, put a sock in it, shut up, because, the talent is starting to wane a little bit. And when you've got that balance between a super talented player, they can say whatever they want. But when that starts to drop a little bit, then it's time to shut up. And I think that balance has just dropped a little bit for the Seahawks coaching staff. They're seeing too much trouble with Sherman, and that's why all these rumors start. It could just be the Seahawks saying, Richard, just put a sock in it.
I mean, for me, I mean, just where the Bills are, I think that for the Bills, I mean, they're rebuilding. The last thing you want to add is someone who's come from a winning team who may not be happy with losing, a little bit. He's a malcontent with a winning team. What do you think he's going to do in Buffalo with crappy weather and a team that's, finished 6-10 last year? So, I wouldn't want to see the Bills give up a first round pick for him. I think he's, he's already hit the apex and he's kind of going the other way now. And I personally would, I don't want to see the Bills, bring him on at all.
You said like a second round pick for the guy. Would you give a second round pick, Rob, or even a first round pick for Sherman?
I mean, I'll make a joke here. I would definitely give up a second round pick for Sherman because Jerry Jones absolutely wastes second round picks all the time. I mean, last year, I'm not saying Jalen Smith in the long run will be a bad pick. Hopefully he can actually get on the field one day, but the Cowboys have a bad history with second round picks. Gavin Escobar, Bruce Carter, J.J. Wilcox, a bunch of people who have never panned out. So to get Richard Sherman, someone who's shown he can definitely be a valuable asset and immediately the best player in our secondary, even if he is on the decline, I think is well worth a second round pick. I'm pretty sure he's 28 years old? He's still
29.
I mean, he's 29. So, I mean, he still definitely has 3 years minimum left in him that he can play, probably more. And Jerry's fine with bringing on malcontents. I mean, we just took a shot at Randy Gregory a few years ago, Greg Hardy, all of which, for the record, I was definitely on board for. So I don't know what that says about me. But one last thing about Sherman. I've always had a soft spot for Sherman ever since that day he went on First Take and absolutely eviscerated Skip Bayless. So really, he can do no wrong in my eyes, honestly.
So if you were to say, where does Richard Sherman line up? What jersey is he wearing on day in week one, Kevin?
Oh, I'm saying I don't think any team's going to get him. Keep him on the Seahawks. I'm saying 100% Seahawks.
Robert,
Seattle.
Justin.
Well, obviously I'm biased, but I think it's Seattle. So they've said the going price seems to be both a good starting player and a number one draft pick. I think that's just too high a price, even for a player the caliber of Richard Sherman. He's still, I think, the best corner in the league. You look at what he's done over the last several years, especially taking the ball away, not even close to anybody else in his stratosphere. Some players cover as well. Nobody takes the ball away like he does. And so, I understand asking for a lot. I understand asking for more than he's worth because a one and a good player is probably more than anybody outside of a good quarterback is worth. So I certainly want to see him back. Hopefully this is just something that he and the team are working through. It seems to be kind of a peeing contest. His sideline antics, I think, are what really led to this last year as far as him getting into it with the coaching staff during games on the sideline. His play last year actually wasn't his best year, but it was a very, very solid year all around, despite him being a little banged up. You'll recall the Seahawks almost got in a bit of trouble because he had to have knee surgery at the end of the year, which I think explains a lot of, which you mentioned, sort of his lateral quickness being a little bit hampered. I'm not super worried about it. I think he'll be good for years to come. Speaking of aging players and where do they go, though, let's talk about a couple of them. Adrian Peterson has been making the rounds. Went up, visited the Patriots. I guess he's been out to the Saints as well. So let's go ahead and start with you, Rob. Where do you think AP is going to end up if he ends up anywhere?
I mean, he's going to end up somewhere. But I think like his asking price probably has to go down. Me and Neil were kind of discussing this earlier. Like, where would he go that he could be a starting guy? You know, kind of be the unquestioned starter. I can't really think of a place except for teams that are, you know, not good teams that, you know, he could, you know, he may not want to go to, or they may not want him because they're trying to rebuild and they want to see a young guy. I think New Orleans would be a fun fit, just given, you know, how much you have to respect the passing game with them. You know, their offensive line is, you know, it's not as bad as Minnesota's. So I think that would be fun. I actually think, I was talking to Neil, I think Washington might be a fun fit for him. I know they got the young kid there, but I mean, they also have a prolific offense. So I think, I don't know, I think it might not be the best fit for him. I think Oakland would be the best fit, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think that Washington may be a fun fit for him, or the Giants.
No, don't say that.
I'm sorry.
So if not the Giants, then who, Kevin?
I actually think a great fit would be the Packers. I mean, the Packers have a great offensive line. Aaron Rodgers Eddie Lacy was okay for like a year and a little bit. But, I mean, with Rodgers and AP and Jordy Nelson back seemingly healthy, Devontae Adams sort of coming into his own last year, that offense, I mean, would be unstoppable. I mean, can you just imagine Rodgers and Peterson in the same backfield? Like, it would bring me nightmares, and I don't even have to game plan around it. I just think that is the best spot for him. Plus, it would sort of be like, okay, Minnesota, screw you. Now you got to face me two times a year. So, I mean, I think Green Bay is the ideal spot for him. But I also think the teams that he visited, I mean, the Saints, Rob said it, the Redskins, and even the Giants would, I mean, every team would love to have Adrian Peterson. The only thing slowing him down, as Rob said it, is his asking price probably. He's definitely got to lower it. But there's no doubt he's going to be playing. You should listen to me and go to Green Bay, though.
I think you nailed it there, Kevin. It's the asking price, isn't it? If the guy's still wanting up near 9-10 million, he's not going to get that anywhere. He's going to be lucky to get 5 or 6 million. I'm not sure what the going rate is for running backs, but I don't know, 3 or 4 sounds more realistic for him. But just looking through the teams, I mean, Chris, our Saints fan, he doesn't want him because Ingram had an outstanding year last year, his best year. He was hitting 5 yards a pop, 1,000 yards, added another nearly 50 catches, so I don't see him at the Saints. Do we see him at the Panthers? Don't know. The Falcons, no. Buccaneers, maybe. As for Washington, yeah, again, it's all down to the price. Yeah, it'd be fine to take him for a year for 3 or 4 million, but not anywhere like 6 or above. We do have Fat Rob Kelly, but, I mean, Washington's running back position certainly could do with strengthening. But I think if Washington goes for anybody, they may well go for somebody who could catch the ball out of the backfield. Maybe New England, that was a place he visited. That could be a possibility for him. But I don't know, where else in the league do we see him? Packers, Vikings, back to the Vikings?
They re-signed, Murray.
Latavius Murray, yeah. I just don't see many teams out there desperately looking for him. Maybe the Eagles.
Who are the Eagles starters right now, anyway? I mean, is Ryan Matthews still on that team? I don't even know.
Yeah, he'll start for the first 2 weeks until the hamstring kicks up again.
Then Smallwood will come in.
Smallwood's
still there, but let's face it. I mean, Sproles are there too, you know. But it's going to be, they're looking for a running back, surely.
Yeah, I can't wait for Goff to really regress this year. Isn't it going to be fun?
Wentz.
I mean, Wentz. Yeah, I mean, Goff.
I like Goff. I don't think he's going to regress.
I'm not sure if it's possible for Goff to regress. What comes after?
Exactly.
Death?
Yeah, well, a high school jersey. That's about it.
The Arena League?
All right, I'm not going to let you guys bait me into that conversation. Instead, let's...
Oh, he's gone.
Arm wrestling, go. Who wants to talk about arm wrestling? That sounds like your thing, Rob.
I mean, my opinion is just, I think it's pretty hypocrite, you know, for those of you that don't know, there's about 30 NFL players in it who are in some sort of arm wrestling contest. It happened to be in a casino, which the NFL frowns upon.
In Vegas.
One of the people, what's that? Or yeah, in a casino in Vegas. Well, the thing that just annoys me is that a league that makes money and uses fantasy football as a big vehicle for what it does, obviously money changes hands in fantasy football. Let's not kid ourselves. To go and, you know, be hypocritical and, you know, potentially fine these players for doing it. And, you know, James Harrison was in it, so everyone's going to get tagged on this, you know, because the league seems to have a little bit of a vendetta with him. I just think the whole thing is stupid, to be completely honest. Whatever, it's the off season. It's an arm wrestling tournament. It just annoys me. They're going to use their bylaws and everyone, I mean, a punter is going to get fined for entering an arm wrestling contest. It's silly.
It was 30 current and former players, so including Pittsburgh Steelers, James Harrison, and retired running back Marshawn Lynch. Hey, is Marshawn Lynch getting used to his new city? Do we know who won?
I don't know who won. No.
No.
No clue.
I'm gonna say it right here, right now. Whoever won, I'll take them on head to head, best of three. I hope it's a punter. In addition to Harrison and Lynch, Miami Dolphins Kenny Stills, San Francisco linebacker Navarro Bowman, and Oakland Raiders punter Marquette King. You got to think, those guys surely are not going to be the strongest kind of arm guys. Who's going to have the real arm strength in the NFL?
I'm not betting against Harrison.
Yeah, neither am I.
He's a workout.
I mean,
Navarro
Bowman's career is pretty much done anyway. He's had like 3 major injuries the last 24 months. He has nothing to lose, so I'm sure he's laughing right now. It's completely ridiculous. The NFL is legitimately angry and going to force repercussions on these individuals.
In terms of arm wrestling technique, do you want a long arm or do you want a short arm? Because Harrison must have like tiny little arms, no?
I would say short arm, though. Although I'm not an expert in the field, in the craft of arm wrestling.
You need a long arm, right? Come on, the movie Over the Top? You got a long arm, right? I don't remember. I watched that movie about 15 years ago. I don't remember how it went.
Yeah, I wonder if
it was a movie about arm wrestling.
Where's Justin when you need him? He's one of these arm wrestling aficionados, no? Justin, are you there? No. Justin's off practicing. I guess you need strong arms, strong wrists, strong forearms.
A nice flick of the wrist.
Nice flick of the wrist, yeah. Yeah.
Over the top.
Well, no doubt we'll find out in due course who wins, but it's this unspoken thing, isn't it, Rob, with the NFL about gambling? You know, you've got the fantasy football and all the rest of it. That's just gambling with another name. And now it's now they've got how can they have a team in Vegas and not let guys go and have fun in Vegas? They're just having fun. Come on.
Well, that's the thing. Like they're putting a team. They're going to be putting a team in Vegas. The NFL Network has fantasy football shows, and also the NFL, you know, website runs fantasy football leagues. You look on the TV at any given point, and you're going to see about a million FanDuel and DraftKings commercials. I mean, come on. I mean, just quit. Just own it. Just own it. Own that it's you profit off other people gambling, and it is what it is.
And also, last year, wasn't there a story about, didn't Tony Romo get banned from some sort of fantasy football thing in Vegas?
Yeah, it was the second year in a row that the NFL put a squash on that. It's probably why he retired, honestly.
Yeah. Well, talking about Tony Romo, should we just, Kevin, do you want to say something about the obviously the heartwarming letter that Jason Witten gave
Jason,
Tony Romo,
my second favorite cowboy in the Romo era. I mean, it was a lovely, lovely, lovely letter. Not nearly as lovely as mine, but definitely had a more personal flair to it since he had some experiences to draw upon with Romo that I sadly never had with the man. But yeah, good for Witten. I'm sure Witten's a little bit sad, but I mean, after all, he did go on that infamous Cabo vacation with Romo and Jessica Simpson before that Giants 2007 divisional playoff game that we unfortunately lost. So Witten, I'm sure, is sad. I'm sure he's happy for his friend that he's moving on to a nice lucrative career. Doesn't have to take the punishment of football anymore. But one last thing about that. I was also on Twitter, and DeMarco Murray retweeted that, and then he also commented saying something like, oh, you'll always be my best friend, blah, blah, blah. And I'm pretty sure he was talking about Jason Witten, thinking that Jason Witten put up his retirement letter, not thinking it was about Romo, because I just don't think he read the entire thing. And I just found that funny, but we'll never know. But yeah, Witten, way to write a tearful letter for your brother. Now go pour out a drink and get on with the rest of your life.
It's crazy days. Hopefully Justin will be able to put in some sweet romantic music behind that little bit from Kevin there.
T.O., that's my quarterback sound drop.
Oh, there you go, yeah. That's right. Have we heard from T.O. in terms of the Romo retirement?
No, I don't think I've heard from T.O.
He's my analyst.
T.O.'s still angry he hasn't gotten in the Hall of Fame.
Quite right. And we're all angry for him. Right, moving on to our final story of the weekend, and that is still Jay Cutler without a team. And I'm going to put it to you guys, Rob, first. Where's Jay Cutler going to end up playing this season? And is he going to be a starter?
I'll be honest with you. When you were talking about it, I can't think of a place he would go and be the starter. Just because of, you know, the money. You know, he's going to want some money. Teams that you would think could be possibilities have already signed other guys. The Jets are the team that I kind of thought would sign him at the beginning of all this. But they signed McCown. I mean, they're gonna sign both, right? You know, they got the two young kids that, I mean, neither of the two young kids are good, but the Jets don't know that. I think a quarterback needs, the team he's gonna go to is a city where the starting quarterback gets injured. There's not a team yet. It just depends on who gets injured in the offseason at the beginning of training camp. He's gonna be a late addition to a team a la Kyle Orton when he joined the Bills.
So tell me, Rob, why is it then that there's predictions of four, possibly five quarterbacks going in round one? They're not all better than Jay Cutler, so why can't Jay get a gig?
Because they're coming out of college, and you can convince yourself that a kid coming out of college might be, you know, with our coaching, he can do this. You can't convince yourself you could do that with I don't know how old Cutler is, what, 33, 34 years old, who has a reputation for being a little bit of a malcontent and who you'd have to pay. I mean, what type of money do you think you'd have to pay, even if you did drag out $8-9 million?
Oh, minimum.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, these kids, you're going to pay $3 million to, you know, so, you know, and plus you have control of their contract for 5 years if they do turn out to be really good.
Okay. Kevin, have you got a team for Jay Cutler?
I have one team in mind for Jay Cutler, and this fan base probably won't be very happy to hear that I think this, but I think a very possible, well, not possible, but in my mind, very happy relationship would form between Cutler and the Houston Texans, because Houston has Tom Savage and my former friend Brandon Whedon as their only quarterbacks on the roster right now. And, I mean, I can speak for Brandon Whedon. He's not one of the best players I've seen before. And Tom Savage he's probably not good either. In fact, I know they're both horrible. I was just trying to be nice. And Cutler, I mean, just imagine what Cutler could do with DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, who's DeAndre Hopkins? His best quarterback he's ever had has been either Fitzpatrick or Brian Hoyer for like three games. It's like, Cutler can definitely work some magic with that receiving core, and Lamar Miller definitely be the best weapons he's ever had, best defense he's ever had. Even in his early years in Chicago, I think the Texans have a better defense than they have now. Bill O'Brien, probably coach him up a little bit like Adam Gase coached him up, which was one of the best seasons he's had in his career, Cutler. So really, I think the Texans, if I was a Texans fan, I would love that, because if they go into the season with Brandon Weeden or Tom Savage as their starter, I would be furious, absolutely furious. And Cutler, although he is prone for the turnover and maybe a little bit of a malcontent off the field, he's infinitely, infinitely better than any of the options the Texans have, and infinitely better than any of the rookie quarterbacks will be day one this year. So even if it costs like 12, 13, 14 million, like, why not? It's a quarterback, and that's super cheap these days. And I really think for at least 1 year, Cutler and the Texans could make some beautiful music together.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. That would be the team I would look to for Jay Cutler. So we'll leave it there with the Texans. I tell you, there was a picture on the internet of Jay Cutler standing completely naked on a balcony looking out over the ocean. And certainly according to our superfan Greg, he said that Cutler's bum cheeks were more suntanned than our Raiders fans Monty's but bum cheeks. So that's a bit of information we all needed to know. And on that note, Rob, I think we will pass this over to Jay, who is doing an interview with hopefully a young guy who's going to get drafted from New Mexico, Dakota Cox, linebacker. And Dakota, if you're listening to this, we hope to see you in the NFL, and good luck to you, man. So, see you all guys through the week, because we're going to be having some special podcasts coming this week. The next fan up, Super Fan Mock Draft. And believe you me, it's a cracker. So, for Kevin, for Rob, and for Justin, who's disappeared off into the darkness. Who knows who's kidnapped him? I'm not sure. We'll let you know next week. That's all from us this week. Take care, guys.
It's my pleasure now to bring in a very special guest. It's not often that we get to talk to a guy with a stature like this guy that we're about to talk to right now. And what I mean by that is a guy who is labeled a maximum achiever, not even an overachiever. This guy graduated in 3 years and has led his team in tackles for four straight years, which is an amazing accomplishment. There's only been 14 people to do it, and this guy was the latest one. And I am talking about the middle linebacker from the University of New Mexico, Dakota Cox. Dakota, thanks for joining us on today's show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
You know, I was reading an article about your career, and I stole that maximum achiever line from your coach, Bob Davey. The article was actually talking about how you were an overachiever and how you've accepted that mantra. Talk to me a little bit about what it must have felt like to hear your coach call you a maximum achiever.
Well, it definitely feels good, and it's really something that I've put in my whole career to pride myself on that kind of statement. And being from a smaller private Catholic school in Utah, I was under-recruited coming out of high school, didn't have very many offers. I had two, and then accepted the one at New Mexico. And it was just really kind of my mindset. I had to learn to work and be an underdog and put in the work that you needed to be able to put yourself on top and compete with everyone else. So I kind of understood that coming out of high school about the things you needed to do to get to the next level. And I took pride in that, and then just was able to take it to New Mexico and have a great, successful 4 years.
Yeah, pretty sweet to be a starter right out the bat. But as we were talking right before we started, you're now obtaining your master's, which it must be a shame that you don't have another year of eligibility to just sort of continue the football career there without redshirting. But at the same time, it's got to be a pretty awesome feeling to know that you're one of only 14 guys to have led his team in tackles for four straight years.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really something I was striving to do, to always be the guy out there that people could depend on. And just knowing my stuff going into the games and putting in 100% effort every play, no matter what the score is, and doing everything I can to just help the team win, I really think that's what helped me get to that position to be able to lead the team in tackles for 4 years straight and get over 400 tackles in my four careers.
And that's only one of three guys in the Mountain West Conference that has done that. So, I mean, Dakota, I mean, talk to me a little bit. You mentioned that you were under-recruited. Talk to me about how that process has gotten you prepared for this next step in your journey. Because, you know, the draft process is one of those things where it can be very fickle. There's only so many positions available on a National Football League team.
Definitely. Well, first I'll start out kind of the story behind the recruitment and things to help me get to New Mexico. And it was just really going into my senior season of high school that summer. Me and my dad did actually a cross-country trek and went to 9 football camps in 13 days, starting in San Diego State and then ending in Indiana. And I even actually took the ACT after a Kentucky camp that day after, and then traveled up to the next one. And I was able to actually get a scholarship offer from the University of Cincinnati when I was going through that camp. And I actually committed to Cincinnati coming out because I was under-recruited and I wasn't having very much activity going on. That was my first scholarship offer, and I decided to accept it because of where Cincinnati was at and with Coach Butch Jones, who was the former coach there, who I committed to. And going into my senior season, because I was already committed, I got the notice from New Mexico, and they actually ended up offering me a scholarship, which was actually the only piece of mail I ever got from New Mexico was a scholarship. So pretty funny about that, but that's all I needed. And it was really kind of something where they told me that they were just here in case they needed me. End of my senior season, Coach Jones ended up taking a job at Tennessee to be the head coach, and I pretty much flipped my commitment to New Mexico, took a trip and really liked it, and then committed, and it went, you know, it was all great from there. And just kind of that whole process, I mean, the process of going through recruiting, the process of not being highly recruited, of having to work hard every day to try to get to that next level, I think it really prepared me for what I'm going through right now, kind of being an underdog going into the draft and having the career that I did and the productivity. I think teams can look at that and see me as a great contribution to their team. And it's really given me just a great mentality, a positive, optimistic mentality to be able to continue to grow on and just take that into the next level.
You know, as I was watching your highlights and reading some of the different articles and some of the players that you've met, I think your playing style does match a lot with a guy that was mentioned as one of your favorite players in Zach Thomas, a guy who was a little bit on the shorter side but had a pretty fruitful career in the NFL.
Definitely. I really agree with that. And I actually got a lot of chances to watch film on him and just kind of study his game. And what really stood out to me was just the intensity he brought to the game for him being his size, and was kind of like me, kind of the underdog, overlooked going into the draft, and people weren't sure what was going to happen when they did draft him. And I mean, he just brought a whole different style to the field. He had a very high football IQ. He was constantly studying. He was the first man in and the last one out of the office, just studying film for hours and just trying to be the best player he could be on the team. And I really relate that to myself, because that's what I had to do in order to be successful here at New Mexico and to be able to lead the team in tackles 4 years in a row. It's just something I pride myself on, that intensity you need in the film room as well as on the field. And then also that effort standpoint that he gave throughout every game, every play. I think that's one of my strong points and my strengths of my ability, is giving 100% effort all the time and playing whistle to whistle.
There's a pretty famous alum from New Mexico who was a middle linebacker, a little different in terms of the size, but certainly gave a lot of his heart as well out in that football field, and Brian Urlacher. Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
You know, I've met him a few times, actually, just kind of in passing, and he was actually able to sit down in our film room when we were at our fall camp in Ruidoso, New Mexico. We used to go up there for about 2 weeks, and he drove up and sat in the film room with us and went over some plays and kind of told us what we could work on and what we looked good at. And I talked to him briefly. The first time I met him was my freshman year when he had his number retired at New Mexico. We were playing Air Force, and just a great night for football, beautiful night, clear skies and everything. And walking into the locker room, coming off the Lobo walk that we have before games, walking into the locker room, I went and introduced myself, and the only statement he said to me is, "It's a great night for football." And I'm telling you what, being kind of like an idol of mine, a guy that I grew up watching, hearing that from him, I went out and had probably one of the best games I've had in my career, and just really blew it out of the water with him watching, and then as well as just him being there and, you know, at least saying something to me was pretty exciting. And just kind of really cool to have that model going through New Mexico too, and knowing that he did kind of the same things as me. And I went in chasing his tackle record, was just a few tackles shy of that at New Mexico. But it's awesome having that type of caliber guy that walks around campus and things like that.
Tell me a little bit about your training regimen. What are you doing now? Because your pro day is done. You're pretty much now is sort of the wait and see period. What are you doing during this time, before draft day?
Well, right now, currently I work out every day at 6 a.m. I'm doing lifting, full body workouts, conditioning, and really just trying to, get myself bigger, faster, and stronger, because it is a different kind of training now, because you're not training for a pro day. You're not training for specific timing tests. Now you're training more football style like I've been used to throughout my whole college career. And so I'm in there in the weight room every day. I've been watching a lot of film, just trying to pick up different people's games and just see what I can better myself on, and doing a lot of different positional drills and things like that, just trying to be ready for when my name is called.
You went to a regional combine in D.C. How was that? What was that experience like?
That was a great experience, just to be around a bunch of other talent that I had not been accustomed with throughout my college career, and just going in to compete with those linebackers and really just put up some good times. I was able to run a 4.7 flat in the laser time on 40-yard dash there. I jumped a 33-inch vertical. I had a great time at 4.40 on my 5.10.5, and then a 9.93 on my broad. But actually, that kind of helped me for my pro day, because the pro day was 2 weeks later, in which I improved every single one of those categories, as well as running a 4.62 in the 40-yard dash and jumping a 33.5 on my vertical, then a 9.6 on my broad, and just really improving everything from that standpoint. And I think the reason for that was because I got to see kind of what they're looking for, the style of, you know, how to do things and going through drills and different things like that. And just being in front of scouts almost got that anxiety, got that kind of nervousness out before pro day. So I was actually very confident going into pro day, and did a great job and put up some great times.
You know, the thing that I love most about checking in on you, Dakota, is that you seem like the kind of guy that a challenge is thrown your way and you're like, oh, I'm not only going to beat that challenge, I'm going to just dominate it. You don't seem to have any, you don't seem to know how to take no for an answer.
That's very true. That's something I've prided myself on since I was very young. My dad instilled it in me. He's a former football player. He played center for USC from 81 to 85, played a year in the league as well. He kind of instilled that mindset in me, and I faced a lot of challenges with going through injury my sophomore year at New Mexico. I tore my ACL in the 9th game of the season, was out through the whole off season going into my junior season. They told me that, you know, maybe I'm not going to be ready with how significant the injury was. I'm not going to be ready for my junior season, things like that. And I really took that as exactly what you said, as a challenge. And I take things like that as an opportunity to make myself better. And with the hours I put in therapy, doing the rehab for the knee, and just getting back onto the field, I came back better, faster, stronger than I ever was, as well as more mentally tough, having faced an issue like that a lot of players go through. And I really just take that to myself to take on different challenges and to not only go through them, learn about myself more, but also come out better in the end.
The other thing I really love about your game is that nose for the football. You just seem to know how to find it. You don't have a problem putting your head in there, taking the guy down where it needs to happen. But you also have a knack for picking the ball off there too.
Yeah, definitely. It's something I kind of look at myself as more of an old school kind of blue collar linebacker. After watching, you know, a lot of former linebackers in the NFL, I definitely love playing against the run, the power offenses, things like that, because I love sticking my head in there and making a great TFL or just a great tackle in there, and can take on a lot of pulling guards and fullbacks and things like that. But as well, also what you said is, yeah, I have improved my game as far as pass coverage and my range abilities, and especially with this past season, I had a few great pass deflections and as well as a pick. I think my pass coverage has definitely gotten better over the years, and I had a great year this past year, as well as this past kind of training for Pro Day. I've been able to work on the different pass coverages and things like that, just perfecting my all-around game and trying to create myself as an all-around football player for someone to pick up.
Dakota, you mentioned your dad. Your brothers are also in college athletics. What's the competition like at your house? Like, first of all, which one of you guys is the best? You can just tell me and the few listeners here. No one else is going to know. You can just admit it to you.
That's funny. It's funny because so my dad played football. My older brother played college baseball. Was a left-handed pitcher at California Lutheran University, who is now working in a career and lives in Chicago. My little brother is a fullback at Auburn University. And as you know, I played here in New Mexico. So like you said, there is a little bit of competition when it comes to different things. And growing up, being a sports family, we were always out in the yard throwing the ball around and, you know, playing tackle football out there, trying to see who's best. And it's something that it's come to my mind, especially, I think, me and my little brother, who his name's Chandler Cox, he's number 27 at Auburn. He plays offense. He plays fullback. I play defense. I'm better at defense. He's better at offense. And I think that's how we look at it. I think we have no problems with that as well. And I wish I had the opportunity to go against him in my college career, but unfortunately that won't happen. Maybe in the NFL sometime. But it's something, there's always competition there, and we're always just hard workers in everything we do and want to put in the work to be the best we can be.
All right. I was given this idea from one of your fellow colleagues, also in the same position as you, going through the draft process. Got to know, if you could have any superpower, what superpower would it be?
Oh man, that's tough. I feel like that just like kind of changes year in and year out. Man, I really think the super strength would be pretty awesome. Just being able to lift everything, and it would definitely help me out in the position I'm in right now. But that's always something I've definitely liked growing up. A big fan of Superman. He's got the strength. He can fly and do it all, but I think the strength is definitely something that would be great to have.
Where are you going to be on draft day, draft weekend?
At my house, doing my normal routine and going through everything and watching the draft and just keeping close touch with my family and just hoping I get a call from someone. And, you know, I've been training to put myself in the best position to have someone make a call to me and just see myself as a great contribution to any team out there that's willing to take a chance on me.
I agree, man. I think you're going to get a call, and if you don't get a call, you're going to end up on somebody's team as an undrafted free agent, and you're going to take that, and it's going to fuel you all through your career. I can't imagine an NFL down the road, Dakota, without you playing middle linebacker on some team, because, man, I think you got the skills, and I love the heart and the desire that you put into the game. So we're rooting for you here on the next Fan Up podcast, and definitely keep in touch, all right?
Thank you very much. I appreciate those words, and it's been awesome talking to you.
All right, that will do it for this episode of the next Fan Up podcast. Sorry for my auto dropping out. Network issues. Fortunately, the guys were there to bail me out. Amazing interview, I thought, with Dakota Cox with Pod Vader. I am definitely rooting for that kid. He sounds like a great guy. You can follow us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. Email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also find us on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. And, of course, find us on Facebook. If you like the show, please don't keep it a secret. Share us, like us, spread the word, leave us a review on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are sold. With that, let's turn it over to Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.